ask about Illuminati.
Since the Charting of Betux,
is it Disney mind control?
Is this MK Ultra Deluxe?
Go Disney,
go wish upon a star.
Go Disney,
you know what to chat for.
Go Disney,
be your grand Pinocchio.
Go Disney,
as above, so below.
Pinocchio seeks for a pleasure island, where traffickers need just falling mines. Captain Hook, a lost boy in Neverland, saving kids from Peter Pan's designs. Nemo fails to survive the Barracuda, and that nobody means no one. Snow White never took another breath. Bird Prince, the angel of death has come.
Go Disney,
we go from real to real.
Go Disney,
Bohemian Grove and no more feel.
Go Disney,
ask about to Illuminati.
Go Disney,
we teach a code to everybody.
Go Disney,
go wish upon a star.
Go Disney,
you know what to check for.
Oh, go Disney,
the new brand Pinocchio. Yeah, yeah.
Go Disney,
it's a fun show to go.
Go Disney, please enjoy the show.
Hello, welcome to the Occult Disney Podcast. Yeah, I've got my radio voice going. I was talking about being a radio dude. I've had people tell me don't use the radio voice in a podcast, but podcasting is the new radio, I guess. We're looking at every Disney movie for what's inside the llama, reading what's inside the llama. Today, it's the Emperor's New Groove. This is Matt here. As always, paranoid Americans over there. Howdy.
Howdy. And what's the difference between radio, Matt, and non-radio? Which one have I been hearing?
I was wondering the same thing, too. What's the difference between a radio voice and a not-radio voice?
Articulation, I guess. Because once I start ranting, it all goes out the window. And I, you know, it turns into just a muddle of words. Which,
so if people tell you not to use your radio voice, they're saying just start slurring a little bit more. Stop articulating.
Yeah, do some East Coast mush mouth sort of stuff, you know.
Okay,
Philadelphia style mush mouth, that sort of thing.
Gonna grab a glass of water.
You Japanese, bro?
Like a little bit, but it's an embarrassing level of no. Sorry.
Seriously, and you—that's
what happens. That's what has happened. You teach English, people are talking to you in English, and yeah, you just don't. You know, you just learn like survival Japanese for stores and stuff.
I'm really disappointed right now. I thought you were gonna like flat out like chung cheng chao
hei ho hei. No, I'm impressed, man. I mean, that's like he has kept as American as he possibly can while still riding the system. Like he's just coasting over there.
I talked to one of my other expat friends. We're just in a nice place where we kind of like he's Australian, I'm American. You know, we don't really fit there anymore, but you never quite fit in Japan either, which can be bad in many ways. But also that means you don't have to follow every social rule, especially the ones that don't make any sense. So
interesting.
That's nice.
You're always welcome back.
We got a third voice today. We're having our first guest today. Juan Ayala is here. Hello.
Hello.
How do you
use my radio voice?
Yeah.
It's an honor. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So I'm glad to be here. I hadn't seen this movie in many, many years, and it hasn't gotten any better. So I'm excited. I'm excited. I have some interesting observations.
Did you see this
as a kid?
I saw it as a kid. Yeah, I did see it as a kid. What year is this movie from?
It came out December 2000.
Wow. Yeah, no, I was a kid. I didn't watch it in 2000, but I did see it when I was small. So because this is around when Pokemon 2000 came out too, right?
Yes. Which Disney distributed but did not make. I don't know if they dubbed it or not. It's not part of the list I'm looking at for this. Although I've done a podcast about it before because one of my other podcasters is a Pokemon obsessor. So
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely, yeah, I remember this. So it came out, yeah, July 21st, 2000. So it was around that same time. So I might have caught it in theaters, but I don't think I did. I'm pretty sure I saw it after the fact.
I don't think I've seen it before. I do remember it coming out because at the time they're like, oh, it's a little more Looney Tunes than the normal Disney movie. It's legit funny, although I don't know if David Spade funny has aged that well. I guess Tommy Boy, something like that's still good. But I was like kind of annoyed by David Spade through most of this movie.
That's kind of the thing though, isn't it? Isn't that literally his character? Because this was on the tail end of a lot of his duos with like Tommy Boy and Black Sheep, where he was lined
Joe
up.
Joe Dirt.
He was Dirt. Joe Dirt. See, I do like, I guess maybe he's a case of someone that I don't want as a voice actor.
Joe Dirt like, is next level. Like that, like Joe Dirt is unironically in like a top 10.
That's a movie for scumbums. That's great. I mean that as a compliment. So
again, I think I've only seen it one time and that was it. Then see it again. I did see Grown Ups in 2010 in theaters. I remember that was pretty funny, and Grown Ups 2 was okay.
But
so
yeah, there are certain people, or another person who I would never want as a voice actor. I'm sure has been used as a voice actor is Andy Dick. That he's in the David Spade zone. At least Andy like as Dick. Performance wise, he was on News Radio and
because so, they have like these nasally voices, right? It's like almost like. Do they even have to act? That's their regular voice anyways, right? That's the way right. They sound regularly. So, yeah, Andy Dick would be another one of those where it's like this kind of nasally high-pitched voice that's kind of annoying after a while, right?
Yeah, and then you got John Goodman, who's just John Goodman here. There's like no way around it. You're listening to John Goodman, you know? So he's someone that's like, again, love him on screen, maybe not the best person to hire for your voice acting. So I was front loading that I didn't like those two by saying I really liked Eartha Kitt as I'm losing the name, Yaviz or whatever, the villain. Who is Catwoman in season 3, I think, of 66 Batman. So
there was a 10 Cloverfield Lane. Did I miss this?
Yeah, there's a sequel.
So there was Cloverfield, the first one, where it's like shaking around, right? And then there's 10 Cloverfield Lane, which this guy is in it. This was in 2016.
It's really good. I like it. It's nothing at all like the original Cloverfield. You got to throw that out. It's like in the same universe, but it's an absolutely different movie.
Interesting, because John Goodman's in it, and I didn't.
Yeah,
I had no idea about this one. I just
saw I like that movie. I like the whole cast that was in that movie.
I might have seen it, who knows, but I don't recall, because I remember watching Cloverfield Paradox, which was on, I think it was a Netflix movie that they did that, which was about the ship, almost like a Montauk project type of thing. So, yeah, interesting. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I did notice it was his voice. Would you have picked anybody else to do these voices if you had a pick, Matt? Like, do you have a little lineup that you would have picked?
I guess my point is, especially for those two, because I did like Eartha Kitt and I liked Patrick Warburton, what was doing Kronk, Kronk, Kronk. Yeah. So he was good. He was Putty on Seinfeld. He was the He's 90s.
Joe and Family Guy.
Yeah, in the 90s live action Tick. Not the newer one, but the older one. But he's good in it. You're asking who would I replace them with? Probably people whose names we don't know. Like just to get that something we start to notice, I think, especially around 2000 is Disney and especially DreamWorks are just trying to, you know, up the star voltage when they hire their voice actors. But they're not hiring voice actors. There's some actors that can do
I would have had Jonathan Taylor Thomas do all the roles.
Yeah, so, sure, why not?
So I saw the budget was $100 million. Is that, does that this movie demand, I mean, does it deserve $100 million budget? Because that's a lot of money for a freaking animated movie. It's not even like Toy Story where it's what's that kind of sort of style called, Thomas, where it's
a 3D animation? But I would almost argue this probably took more effort than a Toy Story-like movie at this point.
This is a development hell movie, which might count. Animation actually is expensive. Seeing a high price tag on a Disney movie is not that weird. But this one, I'm sure, is inflated. They were working on it for 6 years. This was going to be the Lion King director's follow-up movie. And they're like, you just made the biggest movie ever. We trust you. It was going to be much more serious, something like Hunchback of Notre Dame or Pocahontas. But those movies didn't do as well as they thought. So it just went through a thing where it's like, well, now let's add some comedy. Let's hire Sting to write a bunch of songs. And then, we don't like Sting songs. And then Sting got pissed. At the end, you'll remember that the emperor builds his house next to the village, where the joke at the end was, instead of destroying the village, he destroys the rainforest next to it to build a theme park. And Sting was like, I've been standing up for indigenous rights for 20 years. Change it.
Really? So... Toy Story had a $720 million budget, and it grossed
72.
So that's 720 million right here, produced right. on a total of 720 million. And then it says it grossed more than 3.3 billion. So 3.3, got the 33 in there.
I wonder if you're looking at a different, someone else's money in that. Like,
yeah, I think I am looking at, I'm spreading fake news right now.
Okay, because the ratio sounds right, but the numbers don't sound right.
What? Why is this on here though? Because I saw 30 million and then on here says,
oh yeah, Toy Story's a 30 million budget and this one's 100 million. Okay, now I agree with you completely. That's insane.
but why on the Wikipedia does it say 720 million?
Huh. I don't know.
Well, there's different amounts of budget. Some are production budgets. Some include marketing and distribution. Some include a whole, like some actually include profits and losses and stuff. So you have to make sure you're comparing apples to apples in some of these.
Oh, well, and I get you're looking at the entire franchise. So that's the budget for all the films.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the numbers you're looking at are correct, but they are for the entire Toy Story franchise.
You're absolutely right. I need to learn how to read.
But this one, pretty much just plot. Well, here's the weird thing. I was looking at it, and I think all of us, were we all underwhelmed by this movie? I mean, I wasn't like, yes. I hate it, but I was underwhelmed, right?
I had to watch it 2.5 times until I finally found something that clicked.
Okay.
I'm not even kidding. And since I had never seen it before, it's so weird. Like, I'll put these movies on and I can kind of like half pay attention and wait for something to catch my eye. But this one kept going. And I kept remembering like, oh wait, you've never seen this before. You actually have to pay attention to the whole thing. So hence I had to watch it 2.5 times. And then, so I didn't absolutely hate it, but it's definitely not in a top 10 or top 20 of my Disney movies.
Cause I was surprised that the reviews for it were actually quite decent. I mean, Ebert gave it like 3 out of 4. It's, you know, like something like 82% on Metacritic.
But this is at the time, right? Like I feel like whenever we read those reviews, when it comes out, that's not the same type of review of like, watching it 10 years later, 20 years later, 30, and having context of all the other movies and all the competition. Like if that was just the movie that happened to be the only one that you got to see that week or that month, like that's a different type of rating than the one where it's like you're putting it up against all the selections that Netflix and Amazon have to offer.
Yeah. Although somebody likes it. They put out in 2021 the theaters again, and it made a little bit of money. It did have a straight
David Spade. He just brings that audience.
David Spade brings down the house, you know?
It's not that great though, in my opinion. I mean, he's am I missing something? Is he not that great, right?
I'm the one sitting here saying I wish they had gotten different voice actors. So I am on that page for sure.
All right. But let me bookmark this 10 Cloverfield Lane. I gotta watch this.
Yeah. There's the direct-to-video sequel Kronk's New Groove from 2005. Apparently there was a TV show from 2008 or something. Oh, I'm actually looking at Toy Story now. That's not helpful. anyway, there was also a TV show. Oh, here we go. Legacy. It's got a nice long page. Road El Dorado. Go.
I do think that it's got some interesting aspects to it that are atypical of like a regular Disney movie or Disney production. And like I was talking about before we started, this one does not have the Disney proxy in that there's not a kid that gets kidnapped and there's not like parents that die right off the bat. In fact, I don't know if anyone really dies in this movie. They imply it a few times, but then you'll see the character that they implied was dead will be fine and alive, you know, like a few minutes later. So it kind of misses some of those specific beats that I usually look for.
The original story maybe was closer to the Disney proxy. Once they're like, let's add comedy, let's add songs, and it went through eight people's hands. That's where the muddle is. The original story had the emperor finding a peasant boy who looked like him, changing places. Then the sorceress figures it out, changes the real emperor into the llama, and blackmails the peasant to do what she says, or she'll reveal who he is. So,
okay, wait, repeat that again. The popper thing.
That's more. Yes. That's more occult right there. Like he jumped into the body of the kid, and then the sorcerer took the soul from the kid's body and put in a llama.
No, the emperor is still turned into the llama, where she's just blackmailing the kid. Like, you can pretend you're the emperor, but do anything I don't like, and I'll reveal you are not the real emperor.
Okay, I gotcha. So that's where the emperor has no clothes kind of sort of comes from, right? Like that saying, we've always heard it, especially for the last 4 years, we've heard it where the emperor has no clothes. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Basically like all bluster and no substance, which so that fits, although at the time it was called Kingdom of the Sun and Kingdom in the Sun.
Yeah, I didn't get that, the explanation for like the emperor's new clothes at all in the movie, because it's called Emperor's New Groove. So I'm expecting it to have that kind of a plot line where he thinks he looks a certain way and everyone has to play along. But that doesn't happen at all, as far as I can tell, unless it is so over my head that it just like flew by.
The way I interpret, and this is where we can get maybe more into the occult aspect of it, I felt like the groove was a sort of force in a sort of way, because when he throws the guy, when the guy gets thrown out at the beginning from the window, because he threw off the emperor's groove.
What happened at exactly 3 minutes and 22 seconds, by the way.
Did it really?
That's when the guy is actually flying out the window, which is like a 5 second window of time.
So when he's thrown out, that the character, I forget the guy's name, the guy that lives on the mountain, essentially, the peasant, when he's coming up, he's like, don't disturb his groove or whatever. Like, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I'm like, is the groove a sort of force almost? Like is it an entity of some sorts where it's like he becomes possessed by the groove? Because he's kind of, in a way, how you're saying, Thomas, he's like a yes man, right? He's used to everyone getting his own way. It's all about me, 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 me. One of the questions that you look up when you look up this movie is the emperor a narcissist or whatever it was? Like, he's obsessed with himself. And like when he's telling the story from the third person, where they showed bits and pieces of like, the story's about me, not about him. And he like X's him out or whatever it is. It's like, he's obviously self-centered and is egotistical in some sort of way. So is he possessed by the groove? Because he's...
Juan, did you look at the theatrical poster for this movie?
No, let me look it up.
It shows the emperor, and it says it's all about me, and me takes up half the poster.
And I want to submit that the emperor, his name's Cusco, is the villain of this movie. Like, the protagonist is the bad guy. He's the worst person in the entire movie.
Oh, here's where I am going to give you a little bit of Japanese. The original name of the emperor, now it's Cusco, right? Like the city, I guess, although with a K.
Yeah, Peru. I think they're centralizing it on like specifically Peru.
Yeah, his name was originally Manco, which they changed because in Japan that means vagina. Like, in like a really like, that's the most obscene way you can say it in Japan.
How do you say it? Manco?
Manco. So when I'm always like terrified when I have to say mango, because you've got to use Japanese pronunciation for mango, so it's mango, and I'm always like, don't say manco.
grab him by the mango, or by the manco.
Manco. Would that be right? Is that the only word, or are there like multiple words for it?
I think there's a few other ones.
What are the other ones? Let's go through them.
That's the one I know, to be honest.
Oh, see, this is now this is where I'm getting disappointed that you don't know enough Japanese.
You're a disgrace, bro. I mean, you should know Japanese. You should be fluent in Japanese. You should be a Japanese man right now. You should be trimming bonsai trees and doing everything, you know, Hello Kitty.
If I go to another country, I'm going to learn how to say bad words and genitalia. Those are going to be like at the top of my list right away.
Well, I can give you a few other dirty Japanese words. Chin chin would be the wanker.
Chin chin?
Chin-Chin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude, oh, so, I'm thinking of like a Chin-Chin's Adventures, but it's just like a Japanese dick with like a little dog.
Yes, yes. So, yes, totally. So like, you know, we don't read the Three Little Pigs story to students much, you know, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin takes on a very different meaning in Japan. So
well, that chin chin is a fried snack from Nigeria. So
oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, what's hey, you guys want to go snack on some chin chin? And they'd be like, whoa.
We're not into that box saga stuff, bro. All right.
What was it? Just if you want to scream shit, which kids can do. At first I was like, am I supposed to get angry? But kuso would be that. But like kids can say it and it's okay. So kids are in Japan are allowed to basically go, shit. That's fine.
Kuso, like that?
Kuso. Yeah, kuso. Yeah. If so. I want to kill you, shine. That's I want to kill you. I know that.
Shine?
Yeah. Because she is four, which also means death. And that's an interesting one if you don't know. Four is like the bad number in Japan because it's each Nissan she. They'll change it and say yon just so they don't have to say death for the number four. You never really? Give
presents. That's superstitious?
Yeah, you don't give presents in sets of four. You would need to give it in three or five. People don't get married on dates with the four. So April is not a popular
month.
The fourth
floor and elevators and stuff too instead of the 13th?
That not as much as in the States, or but yes. There are buildings that do that. But yeah, four is
so interesting.
The death number. So that's like they're 13, I guess. Or whatever. Wow. Yeah, I guess I just know smatterings. I like I probably know like, you know, 300 Japanese words, but not so many synonyms, you know.
What's the point of even living there, man? I mean, at this point you should just
go on. The food, that's the point. Yeah. Food's all better.
Really?
I'm gonna stand the ground.
Well, and he gets paid better. For just speaking English. Like that's true. The job. Talk yeah, like speak yeah. English, get paid. So yeah. It's kind of like, you know, it'd be hard to give that up. What's he going to do? Come back to the States? Now what are you going to do? Speak English? Everyone does that.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
And you have your family over there, right, Matt?
That's right.
Like they you are. Have your husband and everything lives with you?
My husband lives with me, yes. No, actually my wife's family. We have a generational house, so it's her.
But she's Japanese or no?
Yeah, she's Japanese, and then her parents are kind of here like half the time. And
way to ruin the genetic pureness of
I ruined the genetic pureness.
Yes,
like, so you're actually ruining Japan at this point more than
Japan.
Although they actually a lot of like in Japanese pop culture they love to get they say half, which sounds kind of like an insult. Sounds bad, I guess. You're half, but that's the term they use. So my daughter's half a person. But
wow,
stylish at the moment.
Okay.
Might be one of my favorite tangents so far. We got to learn about a bunch of Japanese curse words.
Yeah. Suck on my curses.
But yeah, that would have been like a nightmare for marketing this movie in Japan. There's been a few really entertaining things where they had to change it in Japan because someone had just chosen the wrong word.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I did see that I didn't know that much, that it did go through different hands and that they wanted to make it more comedic. Do you think they did a good job with making it more comedic? I mean, I don't think there was any parts that made me laugh. But again, this movie is directed towards kids.
I'd say it was as funny as a David Spade Disney movie could be.
Yeah, this is kind of a weird time because we had Toy Story, which they call what the four quadrant. Everybody went to see it. It wasn't aimed at just kids. So they're like, well, let's see how we can pitch it a little bit. So, okay, we'll have some like proper sit. You know, we own ABC now. So let's do some. David Spade is like indebted to them. You know, he's in the machine at this point. If they say jump, he jumps. That's why Batman. That's why Prince did the Batman soundtrack for Warner Brothers. They were just like, let's get someone big in our lineup to do the music. But
we'll release the photos if you don't. And they're like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a couple years later, that's when Prince was running around with no name and slave on his face. So it seemed he didn't like doing stuff like that. Although I do like the 8-minute bat dance. That's a lot of fun and very insane.
So yeah, and I saw here on the Wikipedia page, it talks about because of the underwhelming box office performances of Pocahontas, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Dindal was brought in as a co-director to make the film more comedic. Because of poor test screenings, creative differences with Dindal, and production falling behind schedule, Allers departed and the film became a lighthearted comedy in the vein of a Chuck Jones cartoon instead of a dramatic musical.
And I've got some weird frontline experience of like seeing this happen up close, where there's a project you've been working on for literally 4 or 5 years at Disney, and everyone's happy with it. It hits every box, you know, everything's going good. And then someone will be like, let's pull in, you know, sort of like a little test audience. And what that means for a lot of the stuff at Disney is they'll go and they'll pick people out of the park. They'll go and identify like a family, and they've got companies and like little groups that just do this, and they'll pluck them out and just be like, hey, do you want to watch like a 15 minute, or do you want to play this game for 5 minutes, or do you want to test this new snack, whatever the hell it is? And it's like, oh yeah, sure. Because now they feel special. They just got picked to do something at Disney World or whatever. And these are the test groups. They'll just randomly grab a bunch of people, and they'll do this for like a month or so until they got, you know, like 600, 1,000 different touch points. And then based on just the general feedback of just randos in the park, now it's like, oh, we're going to cut that whole thing you did, or we're going to rework. Like, this girl's hair is going to be green now because, you know, like 70 people all said specifically they wanted a green-haired character. And that's kind of, it's wild to see that they have these like high paid executives and project managers and stuff, and then literally like a girl with her parents will override like what the project managers were there to be paid to do. So that happens constantly in Disney. It's one of the reasons why
at projects the park, keep bro?
Extending what? Over and over. Yeah, right at the park they would do that kind of stuff.
Really? Do they still do that?
I mean, there's less being produced in the park. I think they've shut down most of the production offices to make room for more rides and gift shops and whatever. So it's not, you know, but this is like 2000s and slightly before that, when they actually were doing animation here in Orlando.
And they did not choose me, but I do remember being at what's Hollywood Studios now, and maybe summer 2000, and you know, this was the promoted film at the time, because I guess they couldn't do Dinosaur if it's not hand drawn. But
yeah, Dinosaur was Dinosaur along this year too. That's the one with the again Dinosaur. Yeah,
Dinosaur was this was supposed to be the summer release, but it just, because of all the changes, it got delayed by 6 months. So in the end, Dinosaur got that summer date, and this came out December 20th, I think, something like that, of 2000.
Have you guys done that one yet, Dinosaur?
That was our previous one, yeah. Which,
oh really?
Yeah, we got to talk about all the possible ways that, you know, Godzilla comes for you.
Oh, are dinosaurs real or are they fake?
They're Godzilla is real. That's what I'm saying. What do we come up with? We're too charmed. We're too pilled with dinosaurs as kids. We can't accept the loss of dinosaurs.
Yeah, like I'd rather be wrong and believe in dinosaurs than be right and give them up.
Is that how you feel about Flat Earth too, bro? Like you're so already invested that you'd rather be wrong than just give up?
See, Flat Earth, I feel like there's way more of an onus to prove this theory. I've got too many questions about Flat Earth for me to buy into it. Dinosaurs, like, they've done that investment work. Like the Disney dinosaur movie, Land Before Time, Jurassic Park, like all this stuff, like they've done the work to get me to believe in dinosaurs, and I submit to it. No one's done the amount of work I need in the Flat Earth to get me to submit to it yet.
I feel like we're getting a fair amount of Hollow Earth these days, though. You know,
well, Tarzan. We did Tarzan, and that was all about Hollow Earth.
The newest, don't spoil the newest Godzilla, but I think that also has Hollow Earth in it.
The last one did, so I should hope the new one does.
Yeah, the last one did, but I haven't seen the newest one. I don't know. You guys haven't seen it yet?
It comes out today in Japan. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So I just saw this week the newest Nick Cage movie, Arcadian. Excellent. And you know what's amazing? That I texted Weston, his son, and I was like, tell Mr. Cage this was an excellent film. And he was like, will do.
you should have said tell dad. Like, just start referring to him as dad now. Like you're just bros.
You're lucky. I had to watch 2006's Wicker Man last week, along with a good one. But
that's a good one.
See, so Juan, you're not going to get to admit any Nick not Cage movie is less than like an eight.
That's a deleted scene. That's not in the movie proper. And
really?
If you went crazy Nick Cage from that period, I'm like, go to Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. I mean, that's the best crazy Nick you're getting. That and once he goes nuts and Color Out of Space, those are my two favorite.
They're crazy alpacas. Nicks. Are they at the? Right, those are alpacas. In the movie, it's a llama, right?
Movie, they're all llamas.
They're all llamas. Do they say something on alpaca in this at some point?
No, at the very beginning, he actually, as he's introducing himself, he's like, "You might be wondering why I'm a llama." So he actually explicitly states that he's a llama, not an alpaca.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're very similar. What changes is their temperaments, and also llamas or alpacas, I forget which one, were actually worshipped. Okay, they were actually worshipped in, I believe, Machu Picchu, because they were looked at
It's llamas. Like, they actually had, I don't know if they import them there or if they just like naturally find their way there, but they're on like the hilltops of Machu Picchu, llamas are.
You've been there, haven't you, Thomas?
I have. I was actually, and I went to Cusco too. So I got to like go to some of the places and see some of the like the Incan kind of artifacts and motifs that they're trying to push on this.
It's interesting you went there because the guys that discovered Machu Picchu allegedly were Skull and Bones. So,
I mean, who else has got the capital to just be like frivolously, you know, being like a rich explorer?
Yeah, like an Indiana Jones or something. Interesting, interesting. Real quick, one more thing. You had the Godzilla there. I heard that Godzilla is this deep-rooted fear of nuclear weapons of the Japanese, and that's why Godzilla looks the way he looks a little bit, where it kind of resembles an atomic bomb mushroom thing. Have you ever heard about that?
Now that you're saying it, yeah, sure. That makes perfect sense. yes. As far as deep OG Godzilla, that's 100% what that movie's about. Godzilla Minus One really gets back to that. And that showed in theaters here for, I think it's still in the theaters here. Like, I think the one screen is still showing Godzilla Minus One.
I haven't seen it. I've been wanting to see it, but it hasn't been up on the sites that I use to watch movies.
And then Oppenheimer only came out like 2 weeks ago. That one,
every time we bomb Japan, they come out with a really awesome franchise.
Let's see, we got Godzilla, we only did it once though, I guess. So
I mean, was that what caused it, like in part, in the middle of the atomic bomb, did we somehow sneak in like American pop culture and it's like take a hit of this?
Well, like, we kind of did, because MacArthur basically ruled Japan for, you know, for a few years, right? One of the reasons we just don't get weed here at all is because MacArthur made it illegal, and things changed so slowly in Japan, they just never changed it back. There was never a moral quandary about it. It's just, is it the law or is it not the law? It is really the law. So,
like, people wouldn't look down on you for being a pothead, they look down on you for breaking the law.
Correct.
Wow.
Then Japanese law basically does not distinguish between, like, if the police were to catch you with weed or to catch you with heroin, they'd make no distinction between the two.
Well, might as well just do heroin then.
Yeah, really. But that just means that it's really, and although at the same time the iconography is like common in Japan. I've seen kids, like, you know, with like Toke It Up and giant marijuana shirts, where, you know, child services would stop that.
Well, you've got the Japanese maple leaf, so couldn't you just always be like, oh, it's a Japanese maple leaf?
Yeah. And before MacArthur, you actually could just buy that stuff in you know, pharmacies and stuff. So it was perfectly available in Japan until, so I'm still pissed at General MacArthur. And magic mushrooms were legal until 2001 because the World Cup came and they're like, oh, well, we better change it because other countries, you know, it's illegal. So they made a law in like 2001 about magic mushrooms. So that's a bummer.
Boo.
Interesting. So back to the movie, I'm going to go ahead and say it, but what do you guys think about? So we have this witch. Is she a witch? I never really understood what exactly she was.
She's an alchemist.
She was like an alchemist, right?
She's literally an alchemist.
She's making potions, so.
But she's also the one that transforms literally Cusco, but also in the concept of like a 3-act story or 5-act story, the protagonist is supposed to go through some massive transformation and become like a better version of themselves, which is the alchemical process. And she is the one that orchestrates all that, which is why I think she's actually the good person in this movie. They make her look like a bad person. They draw her like a bad person. But if you look at it, what are her actions and what are the results? The actions is that she forces this emperor to go and live like a commoner. She turns him into a llama, and the llama were like the beasts of burden for this kind of region. So it was like turning you into an ox or something if you were in some other region, just so that you would have to live like a poor worker in the worker class. And through him having to live that, he starts to relate and he becomes a less crappier version of himself. And she's the only one that's able to do that to this emperor. So ultimately, she's the good person and she's the alchemist.
So the original version, it looked like it sketched her out as being far more villainous. And the Kingdom of the Sun version, Isma has plans to summon Supe, the evil god of death, and destroy the sun so that she may become young and beautiful forever. The sun gives her wrinkles, so she surmises that living in a world of darkness would prevent her from aging, which does sound like extra insane, but whatever.
it's alchemical, right? Not the elixir of immortal life. So right here it says, how do you say her name? Yzma? Yzma's character. Yzma.
I just said it with no confidence a second ago.
She is intelligent, comes up with a grandiose plans, etc., etc. All right, so Yzma is seen to possess vast knowledge in alchemy as she accidentally uses extract of llama on Cusco, thinking it was poison in the first film. Kronk states that she should relabel her potions because everything she makes in her secret lab has exactly the same pinkish color. It is implied Yzma practices magic, but this is never shown. She is portrayed as more of a mad scientist, though she claims to be a sorceress. Now, Thomas, does Kronk give you golem vibes?
Oh, is he the homunculus? Is that what you're going after?
He's
already
the golem. He's more of like, he's like stupid, like he's dumb, he follows directions just well enough to get the thing done. Like when he's mixing the drinks and then he forgets about, what was it, spinach something or other, and he goes back to the kitchen and then comes back and forgets which cup it is. It was spinach trap, wasn't it? He forgets which cup it is, and then he has to like, he mixes them all together because again he's dumb, you know. He's a freaking meathead. Well,
he's the physical expression of Yzma. He's like the Yzma golem, Yzma homunculus, just like Paka is kind of Cusco's sort of physical interface world. Like they're kind of like, Paka and Kronk are sort of the brutes and the champions that these two intellects kind of have as their like sidekick to interact with the physical world.
Yeah.
I would say that Pacha is much less personality, who would be the real person. So if Kronk is the creation, but then he has so much more personality, you know?
He has more personality because he represents the actual real world, because he comes from a village, whereas Kronk is just like an ancillary assistant to an assistant. But both of them are literally physically strong, you know, huge men that help like navigate the world, because Cusco is a tiny little frail emperor. He might as well just be a brain in a bottle. Like he can't do anything physically, just like she can't do anything physically, because she just looks like a skeleton. You know what I mean?
He's like diabetes, or what do you say? Is it diabetes or whatever? I think when he makes him carry him, he's like, yeah, yeah. You know, he's like came up with an excuse towards the end of like why he needed to carry him, and it's because again he's a spoiled freaking little brat. But yeah, I saw that connection there, and then towards the end when that army of, I guess, were they guards, but they kind of sort of resembled, in my opinion, again, golems. They were like these automaton that when she told him like, hey, they killed the emperor or whatever it was,
with the red and blue nipples.
Yes, and then they got turned into animals. And it's interesting because I was playing Baldur's Gate last night and I walked past a cow and it was like, this cow is looking at you attentively or something. Like the cow gave me a bad vibe. So I investigate the cow and the cow's like, the narrator's like, this cow is not what it seems. And the cow's like, moo. And then all of a sudden the cow goes, moo. Like, it sounded like somebody saying moo, like trying to imitate a cow. And it's like, this cow isn't what it seems. But I couldn't. I attacked it, and then the whole village went crazy. But then I had to restart the game because they were all attacking me. But again, it reminded me of that, where
it was like the fertility god, and you just attacked it.
I don't know what was going on, bro, but something fishy was going on, because this cow had like black eyes. It looked demonic. I'm sure it was possessed by something. And anyways, but
maybe you just need a better video card.
Those guys towards the end reminded me of, again, golems. They were there to serve their purpose, but then I guess there were guards. So I'm not entirely sure. Are you able to, and I know that you're familiar with this story, Thomas, but you're talking about how in these movies, the character has to go through some sort of transformation. We know that, right? We know that that's archetypal, the hero's journey type of thing, where, the typical monomyth type of thing. Can we make a connection with the Golden Ass and the Emperor's New Groove?
I mean, you can, but it works way better with Pinocchio, because Pinocchio is rumored to be literally based on the Golden Ass.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, the whole point when Pinocchio, when they go to Pleasure Island and they start turning these kids into literal asses, that is sort of the premise of the Golden Ass, so like the philosophical story. So this one, he gets turned into a llama, but I think in this one, it's not as much as being duped as like this was on the nose. He has to go through transformation. So she forces him to go through this actual transformation, and him being turned into a llama and having to live as a llama, that's the transformation. Like, it's kind of a weak one, because he doesn't actually do anything on his own to transform. It's all external forces that are making him transform. And like Matt was saying, in one of the original versions, they just plow over a rainforest instead, which kind of shows that there was zero transformation Ash before he turns back into a human. But the Golden Ass, that would be another transformation that I think would more profoundly affect you versus whatever the hell this guy went through.
Maybe you are not alone on that, though. It looks like a few contemporary reviews were like, gee, it doesn't fit the Emperor's New Clothes. It fits the Golden Ass somewhat better. So you're not the first person to make that observation.
So, because the Golden Ass, it's like he wants to, he's practicing, man. He's an occult. He's practicing the magic. And then, I get what Thomas is saying. But as soon as I thought of it, that's what it reminded me of. We're like, it wasn't on purpose, but it needed to happen to kind of sort of fit the narrative of he changed, right towards the ending. He's like, oh, not everyone's that heartless. And he kind of caught himself, because he knew what he was saying, because he knew he was like a little bit of an asshole towards everybody, and he was going to betray the peasant guy. I forget his name. Was it Paca? He was gonna betray him when he was gonna leave him on the bridge. Right, he's like
multiple times. Like he betrays him a bunch of times.
Well, but that's like the main one where it's like, then he starts walking and he falls and he's like, oh well, now this is awkward, right? Because now I need your help. Now without this bridge is going to take 4 days to get to the village now, right? And then the other time he doesn't listen to him when they're at that restaurant, like, hey, don't go with those people. Like, no, they're going to take me back. He's like, no, they're literally trying to kill you, bro. Like, this is the whole reason that we're here. Because of the people out there.
That could be the Pleasure Island, if we were to say, you know, how this correlates with Pinocchio. That's his version of that.
What exactly? Going back,
well, getting swept up in like, all these people, they're throwing this big party for me. What a great place to be in, not realizing that they're fattening you up. Like, they're actually gonna hurt you. Like, the net of this is gonna be a net negative. And that's exactly how Pleasure Island kind of operates, where they entice you with like these superficial short-term gains, but ultimately you're going to be turned into a beast of burden.
Do you remember when, what's it called now, when it was called Pleasure Island, Downtown Disney? You remember that? Mm-hmm. Here in Orlando? Yeah.
That was back when Matt was stomping around here.
Yeah, that's when I stomped around there.
You were in Florida too?
I was in Atlanta, so I'd bop on down every once in a while. This is like 20 years plus, but yeah.
Yeah. Now it makes a lot of sense when we're talking about Pleasure Island, which we know what that insinuates with the whole Epstein and all that stuff, you know what I'm saying? So it's like not a good look. Maybe that's why they changed the name. I think it's called, I forgot what it's called now. It's called not Downtown Disney.
Disney Springs, maybe?
Disney Springs. Yeah, exactly. Disney Springs is what it's called now. I forget because I don't ever call it that, but
it, yeah. It doesn't. I still call it Park MGM, you know, because, well, there was last time I went there. So, yeah.
I think they had a bunch of issues where minors would sneak into Pleasure Island and like the stories coming out of like, you know, minors assaulted in Pleasure Island at on Disney property after dark. Like they didn't sound good. And it was like, all right, we got to switch this up.
Like when Disney made Frozen, so when people look up Disney Frozen, they don't look up the conspiracy of Disney being frozen. It comes out the movie Frozen. Is that like that? So like,
yeah, you bomb the Google results. Okay.
Yeah.
Although
they're looking for the thing, but it's not going to come up because it's going to come up with like this snowman and everything. Now, do you want to build a snowman? And it's like freaking Walt Disney's head, just like, you know, on top
of it. Like, you got the new movie Civil War, you've got Avengers Civil War from a few years ago. If you look up Civil War, you're going to get that.
in the future, kids are going to be searching Civil War and find the Marvel movies and then just be like, wow, what a wild history.
No, even worse, they're going to look up the Twitter files, but now it's called X, so they're going to be looking up the X files. Yeah. And it's
gonna
be like,
that's actually now we're back into a net positive realm.
That's an improvement, yes.
If a kid ends up watching a season of X-Files instead of doom scrolling on Twitter, I think that's definitely good.
Can I say something without being judged? Is the X-Files not as good as people make it out to be? Is it just me, or?
It had such a very long run that it went through patches where certain seasons and mini storylines were like phenomenal, like better than any movie that was out at that time. But also it went on for such a long time. And this is when seasons had like 20 plus episode each. So if you had, you know, 10 seasons, you're talking about so many freaking episodes. They can't all be winners. So I think that personally, on like a whole range, maybe one out of every two episodes is really good, but the ones that are really good are like better than movies.
All right, yeah, because it's like I can only take so much of this alien disease or whatever, like, so, you know what I'm saying, like I can only take so many episodes of that, and it felt like sometimes it was a lot of repeating, in my opinion.
Towards the end of the series, they start really milking the like Scullers. Dana Scully and Mulder. Mulder's sister being abducted, and then Dana gets abducted, and they start having this like weird thing where it's all just about the abduction and aliens for like two or three of the last season. But like the really early ones are really good. The one about like poison and escaped circus freaks, and there's like ghost ones and vampire ones. Those are all really, I think those are all like season one and two.
Yeah, like early on. Yeah, I just want to.
Late 90s TV thing where they were like, you know, up to that point TV had been, unless it was a soap opera, it had been very episodic, and they're starting to think more about serialization, which now maybe they do too much. So and the balance went to serialization, and it just wasn't, it was too convoluted and weird.
I think that's it exactly, because the ones that I remember as being some of the best ones, they were like completely self-contained. They were like freaking Who's Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps episodes where like you didn't have to necessarily see them in order, but as it went on, it was like, oh, you had to see four episodes before this to understand why you would even care about whatever's happening right now. And it usually wasn't about conspiracy theories. It was like about some internal argument or you know, subtle conflict that these different characters are going through.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm dyed in a wool space communist. So last week, Star Trek, it was like almost completely episodic. It was real trippy. I'm like, that's some of the most fun I've had with Star Trek in a long time, because I don't need to think about this 10 episode story and I can just enjoy this weird trippy story, you know.
Which Star Trek is it, new?
Yeah, there's like five different new ones. It's Discovery, which is the woke one, I guess. But it was just, you know, this, they had a time bug on the ship and like only three people knew it was happening, and they just reset every 10 minutes and then have to find each other and try and like do weird tech crap again.
Interesting. And
the time bug turns
out to be like a Groundhog Day thing.
A little bit like that. Yeah. But you know, a little more
tension. It's been overdone. It's been overdone. I mean, we got it.
I'm a sucker, man. I know, like, and my girlfriend hates it, but the second a movie comes out and it's like that trope, like, she's always like, no, like not watching it. I'm like all over it.
Really?
That's Happy Death Day, Source Code. Like, I've literally got a whole category in my Plex library that's it says Groundhog Day, but it's like 50 plus movies that all follow this stupid trope. I don't know what it is, but I fucking love it.
It came a few weeks ago, the trope of black goo movies. Like, you can come up with a good 20 of black goo movies. And if you let in other colors goo, you'll get, like, you know, the blob from the late
80s. If you want to put that list together, I actually know someone that wants to specifically do a bunch of black goo movies. And I just, once I go to, like, the blob, I kind of, like, ran out of ideas. But I'm sure you know way more than that.
Well, the one that we just ran into was 2019's Black Christmas. I'm not recommending the movie. It's very clearly, it's a PG-13 horror movie aimed at tween girls, basically. So it's not for you, but we were like, it's a black goo movie. And that was, it's not a slasher movie. It's a black goo movie. So that surprised us a little bit. You know, Prometheus, lots of black goo in Prometheus. My co-host was like, I only like Prometheus when it's the black goo scenes. He doesn't like the rest of the movie.
You said black
Prometheus
Christmas?
Movie is pro-female. It's a pro-feminine movie. Only women survive in that entire movie.
Which one?
Prometheus. Only women survive.
Oh, and a robot. Yeah. It's a woman and a robot in the end, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah. Everyone else dies. And then she gets in the next alien, like, really horribly.
And oh, I want to
maybe a spoiler.
I just want to say that Godzilla Minus One debuts on Amazon Prime Video in Japan on Monday, May 3rd. So,
okay, that's actually useful to know because I guess next week's vacation week and my family wants to see it. So, I'm gonna have to watch in Japanese, but it's fine. Maybe I'll learn a few more words.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and, yeah, actually, I'll probably do a VPN and watch it as well. So,
You might be watching it in Japanese, but my buddy
actually speaks Japanese fluently. You didn't
yeah,
know
I'm
that.
Very fluent yeah. in Japanese.
Oh, you're good. Okay. Yeah. No, my buddy I podcast and work with, he went to see it three times, once in black and white, and his Japanese is as bad as mine. So he was perfectly, he's like, I don't care what they're saying. I want to see the monster.
Yeah. My wife is actually half Japanese, so I'm not too far off there, bro.
Does it matter what they're saying when he's stomping on them and they're like dying and getting crushed? I mean, that's kind of the point, right? You don't have to care what they're saying. What are ants saying when you're popping them?
It's an emotional monster.
Konnichiwa! Just like, just get like, or is that Chinese? Is that racist?
That's you can say konnichiwa. No, you have to say konnichiwa when you see someone.
It's a morning. Japanese, so though, right?
Yeah, politely
greeting Godzilla as he stomps on them.
You'd say konnichiwa, unless it's evening, at which point you'd say konbawa.
Konbawa.
Yeah. Konbawa.
Awesome. Godzilla, we were on Godzilla. Oh, I was just going to throw out, while we're on the Godzilla tangent again, Shin Godzilla from, 10 years ago? That's worth seeing if you have not, where all the Godzilla scenes are, like, wide, slow shots. And most of the movie is Japanese bureaucracy not knowing what to do and not being able to do anything because of bureaucracy. And all those scenes are shot like in conference rooms, with, like, lots of quick editing and very energetic. So,
whoa. Cool. Yeah, this is dope. So I grew up watching the obviously suit Godzilla.
Yeah, the Skull of Godzillas, which is, like, always a good time.
Original, like when he was battling all them. I grew up with all that. And I actually put that on for my son the other day, but
didn't take.
These kids nowadays, they got it. They got it good, man. And he knew it was a dude in a suit. Like, he absolutely knew it was not. You know, when they pick him up and like they're like throw them and say, bro.
I love the suit though. I don't. It doesn't ruin the illusion. I'm like, I'm much happier when it is dudes in suits because it's not anymore, right?
See, that ruins the illusion for me. I never liked Power Rangers because it was always so damn cheesy. All that what is it? Not kanji. That's the writing style. Kaiju, right? Is that
kaiju.
What they're calling?
Kaiju is Kaiju is your monster.
I was never. I mean, I can appreciate it for what it is, but it's so fucking cheesy, man.
I like some cheese on my movie every now and again. So
that's one of my guilty pleasures: watching bad movies and watching them by myself. So I actually, when I went to go see this movie, The Emperor's New Groove, I asked my wife if she wanted to watch it with me. She's like, I never liked that movie. I was like, all right, so I guess we're not watching it together, because I was like, I need to watch it for a show I'm doing. And she wasn't wrong, because it, in my opinion, wasn't that great. So,
dude, there are some redeeming qualities. I think I can make a case for at least.
Go ahead.
So this is probably the most anti-woke Disney movie to date, in my opinion, up to the year 2000 when it comes out. And in particular, because the very movie starts out and the song says that there's political manipulators, there's blue bloods that have the intellect of fleas, there's kings and tyrants, and he says that the kings and tyrants are so lacking in refinement that they should be swinging from trees. And I had to wonder at one point, are they talking about like they're monkeys, like they're monkeying around, they're apes, or is he saying like they should be hanging from trees? In that, like, they're kind of showing that if a political ruler becomes despotic, that this is like what you do: you poison them, you try to kill the ultimate ruler. And this is the first time in a Disney movie that this is laid out so specifically. Like, they actually say this in the lyrics, word for word. Like, if there is a political ruler that becomes manipulative, you should kill him. I don't know. That's kind of badass for a Disney movie.
And that's what she does. She just one thing exactly I did love was the label reveal that it's not.
Which is why she's the good guy.
Yeah. Oh, is it the label?
that was a good joke.
Yeah, I didn't like that, but he pulls it up. I was like, "Well, it looked like, and it's a freaking llama."
And the other thing too is that his the villager Pacha or Paka, I don't know which Paka. One it is.
I think Paka.
But Paka, I had to look this up. But Paka represents the Incan mythology of having this like world above, a world below, or inner world, because it might have been like a Hollow Earth reference, and then the world that we live in, and that the world that we live in is actually this like interaction between those two worlds. And I mean, it's kind of like a heaven and hell thing, but the way that I was interpreting it, it's less about like in a Christian sense, right? Like, hell's kind of like tempting us so that when we die we have to go to hell, or that if you're really good then you get to go to heaven. But in this Paka thing, it's almost like two different chemicals interacting, and the actual place where they're interacting, or like the petri dish, that's what the inner world or like the current world is.
Yeah, it's actually Pacha, I guess is how you would say Pacha. And I love how the Wikipedia says, is an overweight farmer.
Yeah.
Residing in the countryside. So it's interesting you say that, because Kronk has the two angel and demon, right? Or angel and devil. Every time he's at a crossroads, essentially, of like, what should he do? He has the little, at the archetypal, a devil and angel pop up, like the devil's telling him, hey, yeah, do that bad thing, and then the angel's like, no, don't do that, you know, be good, or whatever it is, be courageous, or whatever it was that was telling him. And when Pacha sees the llama talking for the first time, he says, oh, it's a demon llama, or a llama demon, something along those lines. And I actually searched that. I was like, is there some weird demonic llama god? And so when you look up demonic llama or demon llama, it's actually an episode in the Emperor's New School show, which is a show from the Emperor's New School is a show from
2008-ish, I believe.
Is it 2008? Yeah, 2006 to 2008. Yep.
And they've got a llama demon in that one?
One of the episodes is named Llama Demon, and it's about him. I think he's actually being tricked into, let me look it up here real quick. And read the synopsis of the Demon Llama. So Demon Llama is the second segment of the 25th episode of Emperor's New School. The synopsis is, Cusco must learn how to herd llamas. However, at the same time, Yzma tests her demon potion, which affects Pacha's llamas as well. So I guess she has some sort of... The episode's title is in reference to Pacha's reaction upon seeing Cusco's llama form from the original movie. So it was like a, you know, calling back, like, oh, when the first time we saw you. But I guess his llamas literally get turned into demons in this episode.
I would imagine that show has to regularly turn him back into a llama, though, just to make the IP work. I don't know. <That's right. laughs> You find excuses. Just again, how Gilligan's Island, they can never get off the island, is the main conceit, right?
Yeah.
Well, I had another interesting note on this one too, that the version of hell in the Incan mythology, like I was saying, it's not just under the earth that we're on now or under the plane, but it was inside, and that they related their demons to all sorts of like geothermal representation, like oil, minerals. And it was making me really think, like what if, you know, like the actual American drillers that are going and they're fracking and they're finding, you know, oil, maybe they actually are tapping into this like inner demon world, and that's why there's so much overlap between, you know, these oil barons and all
there will be blood.
Dude, like maybe there's something actually to that, because the Mesoamericans believed that like the hell was inside the earth, literally, not it was like some metaphorical hell place, but if you drill deep enough that you would actually unlock demons that were like hiding inside of there. So maybe that actually does happen.
That's pretty trippy, dude. And you said that was Incan or Aztec?
This is Incan, and this is the three different Pacha. There's three different versions of it. There's Hanan Pacha, which is above, and then there is K Pacha is like the world that we're in, and then there's Uku Pacha, which is this inner world that where all these demons that are related to mining and oil.
Whoa, yeah. So Uku Pacha, is the inner world. Uku Pacha is associated with the dead as well as with new life, as the realm of new life. The realm is associated with harvesting, and Pachamama, the fertility goddess. Damn, dude. So
and inside of like the actual underworld aspect,
there's a sun and moon.
Uku Pacha, there's the Supe, who's that, like their devil, but God also
death is what I had described.
The realm where Supe rules is called Salamanca, which I just thought of Breaking Bad, because that was like the bad guys with the bell. His name is Salamanca, but Salamanca represents like the area of the dead, which is under the rule of Supe.
Wow, that's a dope find, dude. Is there twins in this too? No, there's no twins, because remember the twins from Breaking Bad?
They're kind, I mean, in theory and in like symbolism, they kind of are these twins, because the whole concept of these like three different worlds, or really the upper world and the lower world interacting with each other, it's this dualism of something called like Yunan Tin or something. And that Yunan Tin is sort of like the Incan version of as above, so below. It's like their mythical outlook at life, that everything gets balanced out. It's almost like a Taoist belief.
The realms are not solely spatial, but were simultaneously spatial and temporal. Although the universe was considered to be a unified system within Inca cosmology, the division between the worlds was part of the dualism prominent in Inca beliefs known as Yanantin.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yanantin. This dualism found that everything which existed had both features of any feature, both hot and cold, positive and negative, dark and light, male and female. So,
and one of the examples of this one is that whenever they were giving some kind of like a sacrifice, or if they were breaking bread or they were drinking wine, you would always pour out two drops first, and that was supposed to be one for like the positive node and one for the negative node, that duality. But this also made me think, like, did the Incan culture, are they the ones that started out like, pour one out for my homie? Because like literally every time before they would drink or take a sacrifice, they would have to kind of like pay their respects first.
Yeah, not in the box, bro. You have to make sure you get all the fluid.
Let it drip down the chin.
Yeah,
this is a weird example where a few iterations before you know, three retoolings, and it was Kingdom of the Sun, that would have had a lot more of this stuff, and like the angels and demons on the shoulder. I get what you're saying. I'm also thinking, well, they're trying to make it feel like a Looney Tune, so that, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck always have those guys on their shoulders. So
can I share my screen real quick, because I found this really interesting.
Yeah, it's $20 though to share your screen on this podcast.
All right, well, I'm going to describe it to you then. So there's a representation of Pachamama in the Incan cosmology from 1613, and I guess after a picture in the Sun Temple, Cuercancha in Cusco. Is this a real place? Because this is a really interesting picture. And it's in my opinion, it shows that they're like worshiping a sun, like an actual sun on an altar. And that's, it's making me think of like Hollow Earth, the black sun, and you know, that whole idea of there being what's the one, concave earth with Koreshanity, where it's like the shell and then the sun is in the center, and that's like the, we're looking at the, we're from the inside, we're looking at the sun in the center. We're actually all like on the inside layer of the concave earth. So yeah, let me share my screen real quick.
Yeah, that seems to have a lot more to do with the original too, because Yzma in that one is literally trying to create a black sun, basically.
So check this out here. This is from 1613. It's a representation of the Pachamama, which is this again. This Pachamama is the god, is a goddess revered by the indigenous peoples of the Andes and Inca mythology. She is an earth mother type goddess and fertility goddess who presides over planting and harvesting, embodies the mountains, and causes earthquakes. She is also an ever present and independent deity who has her own creative power. Da da da. Interesting.
It seems they were trying to avoid having this be too much like Hercules as well. So I think they maybe like kind of cut out a lot of more of the mythology for this one, just so it didn't feel like they were doing, because same thing with Hercules, zero to hero. He's more likable because, you know, the emperor's, he's probably cutting people's hearts out and toss them down the temple. I guess that's Aztec.
Although there is an Incan practice of, they actually had a specific word called capacacha, I believe, and this literally was the Incans' version of child sacrifice in order to appease the gods for it was basically the same fertility rite that we ascribe to like the Sumerians and like the Moloch and the Baal worship. The Incans had their own version, capacacha.
Okay, and the emperor is the guy doing it, so that makes
they're throwing people out the window like it's nothing.
True. So like, at 322. Hercules never comes quite across as a villain in the Disney movie. Sorry, let me just make sure we put, you know, where Zeus is a benevolent god in the Disney movie.
He's not as oh, I can't say that on here, but do you edit these after, Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I mean, I should, but no.
He's not as grapey, if you know what I mean. I'm saying like not that grapey. And
he doesn't like that Welch's.
Yeah, he's always graping people, giving them juice, you know. All stuff,
but yeah, I guess the flaw with this movie is there's just so many, like, it's kind of sort of okay but a little bit bland, and there's just so many avenues where this could have been better, entertainingly better for, you know, weird occult stuff. It's kind
of
like,
you can see all the places where originally something, like when you said that originally Yzma was going to take away the sun because she wanted to be youthful forever, because there's a scene in here where he like zooms in on her face and it's like, man, look at all those wrinkles.
Like,
this is weird. Why did they do that? And never comes up again, and now it makes sense. Oh, because originally they were steering towards this plot, and then they got, you know, certain length in, and they were like, okay, actually we're going to change it to be this, but they don't go back and re-edit that scene for whatever reason.
I think at one point, doesn't he say, why do you look like this? He's like, you're like the embodiment of like evil or something along those lines, where it's like showing what's on the inside starts to come out and show on the outside. Yeah,
and you know, she's totally Cruella de Vil. Like, there's no way that she's not Cruella de Vil.
That's and the one from Dalmatians, right?
With the colors and the silhouette.
Oh, ironically, this movie got kind of thrown under the bus for 102 Dalmatians. I guess quality-wise, they just decide we're going to put our promotional power for 102 Dalmatians. So when this came out, it came out to fourth place with 102 Dalmatians still like above it in the box office. So that was kind of embarrassing for this movie.
Yeah, she did give me Cruella vibes, but isn't that archetypal of like Disney movies? There is always that one witch kind of dark character.
Yeah, the Rescuers had almost the same character we noted when we did that one.
And I mean, ultimately, I'd argue they all get root in Chernobog, the black god from Fantasia, because that's what the silhouette, even in, you know, Cruella de Vil and Maleficent and so many of the other, like the ultra villains, they have the silhouette of Chernobog.
Really?
Absolutely.
And I guess that's where Yzma's, if I'm still don't know if I'm saying her name right, but I guess that's where she's Yzma.
In the movie, they say Yzma.
Yzma, okay. Yeah, because she's not, she doesn't seem to quite fit into that box. She's not quite that.
Well, I don't know, because if you look at Chernobog, right, like you could see Chernobog from a puritanical standpoint that he's like this evil, you know, God, that's everything unholy, and that, you know, the angels come in and they sing, you know, all these Beethoven songs or whatever. But he's kind of required, like in the pagan rite and that Worldpurgers night, like that's sort of like this ritual that happens every year, and they summon him in order for the rest of the year to kind of go as planned. And that's sort of what Yzma in particular in this movie, like she's this, what looks like a nefarious character, but she's required in order to allow the emperor to become his best self. Like without her, without the Chernobog,
she was the sacrifice, essentially. Yeah, she was the sacrifice at the end, because she's the one that really lost. And it's the one of the funny parts was when she was lifting up her I guess skirt, and they're like, oh my god, and they're like, no, and then it's like she had the she had the knife, they're like, oh okay, like, you know.
So, well, honestly, the old guy that gets thrown out of the window for screwing with the emperor's groove, he's the sacrifice, because from that moment on is when the whole plot line advances of transforming the emperor.
Of course, he's not a sacrifice. He shows up.
Yeah, I know. He gets caught, but he gets caught in like a red ribbon, which maybe it's like that was representative of like he actually died and that's his blood coming out. But it's a Disney movie, so they can't.
So I tried looking for as much as I could on occult stuff. I'd have to agree with you guys. There wasn't really a lot there. I thought there was going to be a lot more when I had originally agreed to do this. That's why, you know, Tom was like, oh, you want to do Empress? I was like, yeah, dude, this probably has a bunch of alchemical stuff.
Well, she is. She's a freaking alchemist, man.
But it was underwhelming.
We have found when Disney goes for like a different culture, you expect like a Mulan, we kind of expected some stuff, but since they were trying to do Chinese stuff, it's just like, it's kind of like they were so focused on that, it didn't have the proxy, right?
Hercules, there's one thing in this movie, curious if I detected this right, but it's the first time that a Disney movie has been self-aware to the point where they've got a slow ride. Or they've got like a dark ride in the movie, because they're actually, they go on
meta,
like it's super meta. And I can't, like, can you, Matt, and of all the movies we've seen so far, do they ever go on a
Genie
in
Aladdin? Does it? Oh, they don't go on a ride, but I think the Genie in Aladdin's the first time they kind of got a little, you know, self referential.
Oh, yeah, because they do like one of those Hollywood rides.
But that's because they told Robin Williams just to basically rant, right? And then they had to animate what he was ranting. Where here it would be a little, you know, you obviously have to design everything here intentionally. So I think this is the first time maybe Disney's gotten that self-referential, though we've seen it in Disney movies before.
Yeah, I did see that towards the end. I was getting pretty meta, and I'm like, it's kind of getting kind of too self-aware for a second. It was towards the end where he's like, you know, it's not about him. I don't know, that was the middle, but there was a part, oh, when it gets to the llamas, he's like, that's me there. And it's like, yeah, we get it, or something, or something along those lines. But yeah, no, I do agree with you. It did feel pretty meta towards the ending there.
And they raced to get this movie out in the end. It did come out late. It was another one where Katzenberg had been in Disney until 1994. So he had already seen, like, you know, pre-work for A Bug's Life and for this movie. So he goes off and with DreamWorks makes Ants and The Road to El Dorado, which came out about the same time as this. So it's another Ants Bug's Life thing.
The Road to El Dorado, that's another one. That's the one where they're looking for the... Have you guys done that one yet?
No, that's DreamWorks. Out. So, you know,
it's not even Disney.
We might, it's not, but the Katzenberg had been the head of Disney's animation, left under bad circumstances in the mid-90s, and then basically proceeded to make his own versions of all the movies that Disney was working on at the time.
Atlantis, though, is Disney, right?
That is. We're doing that in a few weeks. Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. See, that's cool. But again, I mean, I give it a solid. This movie, I give it a solid six.
Gentlemen, six.
I give it a five. Five llamas out of 10 llamas.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with the 5 out of 10. It is funny. Monday, I went to the Disney Sea Park and walked by a coaster that apparently was themed after this. Didn't ride it though. You know,
a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's next to Indiana Jones, so you assume it's Indiana Jones themed. But when I was looking at the wiki, it's like, no, it's actually based on this movie. Like,
you never ridden it?
I read it like 15 years ago.
It's Japan, you said?
It's called Raging Spirits.
In Japan?
Is it the part of the movie where they show the dark ride?
This is a roller coaster, so it doesn't resemble the dark ride in this movie, but it resembles Kronk's Palace. Palace, though. Kuzco's Palace. So
what's it called? It's
like Raging Spirits. So it looks like the ruins of his palace, basically.
Disney Sea. What the heck is this? Is this like Disney Japan?
Yeah, they have a Disneyland, and next to it is Disney Sea.
Interesting. I never heard about this, but yeah, I'm seeing it here, Tokyo Disney Sea Raging Spirits. So I see the archway. Wow.
But it was enough where you could do all the big attractions, but not the small ones. And that counts as one of the smaller ones. It's kind of it's not a kiddie coaster, but it's not one of the main attractions there.
Wow, that's really interesting.
But yeah, there kind of is a ride based on this movie, kind of vaguely based on this movie.
Yeah.
But I didn't ride it this time. Do you guys have any other notes on it? I'm looking at my notes and I didn't write that much. I had a lot more just by studying the production thing than from my personal observations of the movie.
I was actually struggling to find stuff, and yeah, I couldn't really find much other than, again, I think Kronk has the little antenna looking thing. I said if she's an alchemist, it's probably her golem or something. And it's interesting because at the beginning, when they're sitting at the table, Kuzco is kind of insinuating like, oh, so how old is this one? You know, like 20 or however long. Almost like if she's done it before and has had other golems, I guess. Like, I don't know. But she's like something like that. And I'm like, you know, either.
Because she's more like, I can find another big, dumb, strong man. But more like, I can make another big, dumb, strong man.
She had the whole entire owl cabinet full of different animal potions. So who knows what kind of sort of homunculus she was making.
Well, and there's something else that stands out about Yzma. And that's that, first of all, in some of her scenes, there's checkerboard floors in the palace. And I had to look this up. And checkerboard floors were not a motif in Incan or any kind of really Mesoamerican cultures. They did a lot of stripes and they did a lot of other intricate geometric patterns. But a straight up checkerboard floor was not one of those. So that was kind of interesting. But another thing too is that she was kind of dressed like a 1930s flapper. Like she was kind of at like a F. Scott Fitzgerald party, right? Like she doesn't really fit into Aztec culture. So I'm wondering, does Yzma actually represent sort of like this American dabbling in Mesoamerican culture? Because around the 1930s is about the same time that America starts exploring, you know, psychoactive properties and like different sort of on the edge types of research that they hadn't up until that point. So Yzma in a way feels like an American character in this movie. She doesn't seem like an Incan character, you know what I mean? Like she's Cruella de Vil. So maybe this movie is referring to that.
So she's kind of Catwoman, right?
I mean, yeah, she's kind of Catwoman. But like either way, this is maybe like Americans or modern secular science moving in on the alchemy of, you know, like the old Incan and Mesoamerican cultures.
So pull up what I just shared, bro, because now you're making a good point where it's like these scenes were kind of psychedelic in a way. Like if you look at it, that's pretty psychedelic,
right? And like, look at her clothing too. Like tell me, does she look like a 1930s, 1940s flapper, or does she look like an Incan, you know, assistant to an emperor?
Yeah, I know. I see what you're saying. And I don't know if you guys caught this little Easter egg, but I did. Here, there was a picture of it. Actually. Is it? Was it
a nipple? I thought that was the Easter egg.
No. So right here, at the beginning, when he serves the wrong drinks to her, and then she pours it on the cactus, when they go back to the cactus,
the cactus turns into a llama, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, no, interesting connection, bro. But now it makes a lot of sense with those scenes, the way they look.
Well, and also when they go at the end of that roller coaster dark ride, they reappear. They're wearing 1930s Dr. Frankenstein style lab coats with like the black goggles and the black rubber gloves. And like her representing this version of alchemy that everything gets standardized, everything gets put into a little vial with a little label on it. Like that also does not seem like an Incan shaman sort of property. That's something that a 1930s American scientist in the Rockefeller system would be doing.
This movie needed more cocaine then.
So well, yeah. And ironically, they do not show any of coca, and coca was one of the most sacred sort of substances in Incan culture, especially around this time period that they're kind of hinting at. So I guess long story short, Yzma represents the fact that the Rockefeller medicine system is ultimately a good thing because they help you transform externally. Even if you don't want to go through it, it'll make you better.
Mm. It'll turn you into a llama or a cat.
I don't know. I think the emperor is going to get over his lesson within like 2 weeks and get back to doing horrible emperor stuff. Cause that's how the throne works, I think.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I think, it comes to show in this version, you said they didn't knock down the rainforest?
Did not. He builds his house right next to the
Sting village. Got all pissy about it.
I don't even know who Sting is.
The police? Sting. No. You know Sting. What? I guess ever since like ACAB culture, all cops are bad. That also means Sting is bad. No. Oh, yeah. Like does Sting get pulled into the ACAB movement?
So Gordon Matthew Thomas Sumner, is that him?
Yeah. Well, he quit the police in 1985, so it's been a while.
Oh, the police. Okay. That's what you were saying.
Voices in my head.
I thought you were talking about like the police. I'm like, what the hell do the police have anything to do with this? All right,
rocking. Well, that's what they have to do.
This is a one and done. I'm glad I didn't watch it with my family because I don't think they would have paid attention.
Fair enough. I mean, once you hear David Spade's voice, I don't know how many people. They could have replaced him with Gilbert Gottfried, and it probably might have been better.
Do you have an impression of that, bro?
I do. I can't do a Gilbert. Do you? Can you do a Gilbert Gottfried, Matt?
I can't. I know.
I can do a Gilbert Gottfried. I talk like this all day. I don't know.
It's not a great one, but it's a one.
Yeah, like, yeah.
One.
Could be better.
I haven't thought about
it. 5 out of 10, bro. 5 out of 10.
I guess we'll wind this one down then if no one has a...
What's next movie? What are we doing next?
Recess, School's Out, based on a TV show, I believe. Don't know what to expect at all from that. And after that, Atlantis, which I am extremely looking forward to because I remember liking the movie and there's definitely more than one thing to talk about.
Yeah, definitely.
That'll be cool. Well, Juan, I guess I'll ask what's going on in your world of podcasting and such these days.
Finishing up the stuff for the campaign, Cultus Mundi. Been writing a lot, and been writing a lot of shorts. So I'm constantly have to keep the wheels turning and burning every single day. But yeah, that's all I've really been up to. Just trying to really branch out with content. I tried streaming for the first time in 5 years yesterday, playing some Baldur's game, trying to do like a fun decode playthrough. And fun fact, I wanted to be a streamer before I was a podcaster. So I guess kind of going back to see what happens. Because when I first tried streaming, nobody showed up. And this time, a little bit of people showed up. So we'll see what happens with that. But I try and make it a new thing and build up other channels and other avenues of content, different forms of content.
Grifter.
Yes. Into the max.
I've done some live chats, which you just have to kind of stick with it for a little while till people start showing up a bit and expect that you might just be sitting around playing video games once or twice, like anyone paying attention.
Which is okay with me, bro. I mean, you know, sometimes it gets exhausting doing research and reading and all that stuff. Sometimes you just want to do mind numbing stuff, right?
Yeah.
Watch Godzilla movies all day.
That's not a bad way to spend your day, I would say.
Godzilla, konnichiwa.
Yeah. And then you get stomped. What's going on for your paranoid May then?
Man, I'm going to have to get Juan to help me out because I've done a few different game streaming episodes. I've got a series called Let's Play with Paranoid, which sounds a little bit kinky now that I say it out loud. But I cannot figure out how to get it to stream to Twitch. It'll like StreamYard will say you're streaming. It'll give the green light and everything. And then I'll go and check Twitch later and it's like no videos. And I've literally streamed it like a bunch of times.
It happened to me yesterday too. My friend said it takes a while to load up, but I think there's a setting for it, if I'm not mistaken, because when I first started a long time ago, this is like 5 years ago, it would save it for 30 days. And the last couple of times I've streamed to Twitch, the podcast and this stream last night, it didn't save. So I have to figure it out. And once I do, I'll let you know,
Thomas. All right, so maybe a StreamYard thing. We'll figure that out. So outside of that, Juan and I just wrapped up The Chosen One, which got over 400% funding on Kickstarter, which is huge because the first one got 200% and something. So if we can keep doubling the amount of readers each one, and we're still doing baby numbers. I think it was just shy of 60 people that backed this. So if we can get to 100 and then the 200, because I regularly see these comic campaigns, once they get momentum, they can pull in 500 backers. So that's kind of the goal, and we're inching towards that. And I'm hoping that the next series that I got coming out tomorrow, and if you're listening to this now, it's probably already out, and you can go to adultoccult.com, which is the first Paranoid American adult-only series. So we'll see if this one spikes the numbers. And if so, we're going to make Juan naked in the next issue of Chosen One, because that's the way we're going to go now.
No, we're not, bro. No, we're not.
But he only wears a towel in issue 3, so.
Yeah, there is that. So,
the logical conclusion of that is that someone takes the towel and now he's naked.
Maybe I'll be inserted in the... I'll have that horse long on the next Illuminati comic book.
Got bigger.
Making homunculi. But yeah, this is fun. Thank you for having me as your first guest. I really appreciate you guys. And yeah, tjap.com for all my stuff. Sign up for my emailing list or mailing. What are you supposed to call it? Mailing list or emailing list? Like, how does it?
Grifting list. Your grifting,
grifting list. All right.
So you need to send out your spam.
Yes.
I guess I'll say if you want to hear me talk about bad movies, you can start Patreon Podcastius, where I watch lots of bad movies. This movie is great compared to some of the movies I watch. So for podcasting, love Nick Cage. Not going to give 2006 Wicker Man the time of day. The scene you're referring to is a cut scene, which I will watch that scene. So
Arcadian, bro, was pretty good.
Okay, I definitely hit that up then, and gonna. I guess it's time for a nice drink and to turn into, what would I turn into in Japan? I think I'd turn into one of those onsen monkeys. That would be the thing to turn into here.
School's out and it's time for recess.
Yeah.
My.